This is Amateur Logic, episode 199, for November 15th, 2024. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. This holiday season, elevate the amateur radio experience with ICOM. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Tommy.
I'm Emil.
And I'm Mike.
And it's great to be back on this chilly November evening, especially if you're outside.
Yeah, George, it is approaching the 40s down south, which is rare for us, but definitely cooler out here. And it's taken some getting used to with the short sleeves, so...
Yeah.
I might have to put on a sweater later.
Well, you've moved a little to the north there, so you're going to have to get used to our climate.
That's right. I'm above I-10 now.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah. It's a whole different weather pattern.
Yeah. Good to be back tonight. We've got a fun show lined up. Tommy, what's been going on over there?
Not a whole lot. Got some of my gear out. Oh, you look at my mic.
No, I was trying to see what your shirt said.
Pilot Institute.
Oh, for your drone?
Yeah.
Drone pilot? Okay.
Yeah, that's where I took my class. So I do have some class, or I did.
You did. You had to pay for it, though.
Yeah, I had to pay for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, got my gear out. I think I'm going to try my hand at some Parks on the Air stuff coming up. So
cool.
I'll see a little bit more about that shortly.
Yeah. Email? Well, did you get run out of the house, or what's going on there?
Yeah, so over here the shack is not quite built yet, so I'm just actually enjoying the outdoors here because it's really nice with this weather. I could get used to this.
And notice the ceiling fan's not on.
It is not on. Normally, it's on to keep the bugs guessing and flying into other stuff instead of me. But tonight, no, they're not. There's not a bug in sight.
So it seems like you're enjoying this outdoor life. You know, I was raised outdoors by wolves. No, not really. But I was raised in the country, so yeah, it's different than living in town for sure. You can step out. Side and you know you'll hear some gunfire during hunting season, but you know, not normally during the day like you do in town.
So. No, I've experienced all of that not the town part, but now that I'm out in the country, every once in a while you do hear some hunters and their hounds.
Yeah,
so it is that season too this year. And I can't tell you how many times already driving down some of the highways down here that we've avoided deer just hopping right across.
Oh, yeah. That's a real problem around here, too, especially around the Natchez Trace.
Yeah. Mike, what are things like up there? Have the moose come out yet?
I haven't seen the moose, but it is definitely getting colder. It's getting down to below freezing at night. So, you notice I'm wearing flannel.
Yes.
Long sleeves.
That's the official Canadian uniform, right?
Yes. Flannel is the tuxedo of Canadians. Canadian tuxedo, I should say.
Okay.
Flannel shirt and blue jeans. Canadian tuxedo.
Okay. I like your background there tonight. That's a little different.
Did everybody get the memo?
Yeah,
I brought mine.
I got mine.
Mine's still in the case.
Oh, cool. You got the deluxe model with the leather case. Now, if you look on the meter movement, just below the 260, it'll say what the series is. Mine's a series 3.
Mine's a 7M. Seven mirrored. That. Right below 260.
Series 6.
Six. Okay.
Now, I was on the, if you go to Simpson260.com, you can download manuals for all the various series. In this particular one, the Series 3, I found out it's from 1958-ish.
Wow.
So, yeah. They started with the Series 2 after the original model, as I was reading some of the history on that website. And it's kind of interesting. I think they went up to what is it, Series 7 for the Model 260, and now of course they got fancier models since then. But yeah, you should check it out. Simpson260.com.
I'm gonna do that.
And you know, it is sacrilege to put Duracell batteries in these. You don't want to do that. Email, are you going to show us your Simpson?
You know, George, y'all know I'm the cheap old man. And the one thing I love about those Simpson meters is the shiny, nice little thing where you could see the parallax and the meter motion in there. And my version of that, if you really pay attention when you stick it in to the probes into the outlet, to read the voltage, you can kind of see it right here, your reflection of the meter is moving, the hair, you know, the more it stands up, the meter movement is pretty good, the action. So, yeah, I got my Simpson, George.
The higher the hair stands up, the more voltage.
That's right.
Does it work better in a thunderstorm?
Yeah, and if you're standing in the water, yep.
Yeah, so don't try that at home, people.
Interestingly enough, I see yours doesn't, or does it? Does yours have the mirror?
Mine does not. George's does. Yeah.
Okay, for parallax error?
Yeah.
Does yours, Mike?
No.
Yeah, not a lot of them do, and people don't know what that's for, really. I mean, well, if you're old like us, you do, but...
Yeah,
you don't see a lot of them, I don't guess, with mirrors.
I just crossed my eyes. You could see the reflection right here in the hair, you know.
Well, you know, you brought that thing on before the show, and I had to try that out for myself, and it rebooted my T-shirt.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know if you put, because the voltage on an alkaline battery is slightly different than a carbon zinc battery. I wonder if that changes the measurements you're making from the meter, if it needs to be recalibrated with alkaline batteries in it or not.
Good question. Show us your probe.
What?
Turn it around, I'll show you.
You've got banana plugs, yes. Regular male banana plugs.
Yeah.
This one has females. What does yours have, Mike?
Well, I don't have the probe set for mine, but mine looks like it's just got banana jacks on the front panel.
Yeah, well, for some reason, this one had females on it. And if you remember a few months back, somebody wrote us about these right here. I had to order a set.
Oh, the converters?
From Amazon. Yeah, it's a female on both ends.
Right.
So you can plug that in there, and you can use regular probes with it.
Interesting. Emil's has four-prong connector.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Special. Yes, very specialized, highly.
And stainless steel, too.
Yeah. It's not going to tarnish in the dishwasher.
Yeah. Yep. The silver is good conduction, you know, really. It even has a thing where you could put it on your tongue so you don't swallow your
in case your hands probes are busy. Yeah. Okay. Well, enough of that. I got an email here. This came from Kenny, W2KRT. Hi, George. The package arrived today. Thank you and AmateurLogic.tv for hosting this awesome event. You may remember that Kenny, W2KRT, won the Amateur Logic 19th Anniversary Contest. The package arrived. The Eagle has landed. You got awesome. The IC702, the Intellitron antenna, power supply, and Messi and Poloni coax. He's in good shape. So
yeah,
thanks.
Congratulations again.
Yeah. congratulations. Thanks for sending the note along. Mm-hmm. And be interesting here. We wanted to test that antenna out ourselves, but just I had to ship it. You know, we'd given it away, so we didn't get a chance to. But that price, man, that's pretty tempting.
Yeah, I'd be interested as well to find out how well it works. Because the original, I guess, Outbacker that it's based on, I don't even know if they make those anymore.
I want to say I did see them, but I don't know that they're sold in the U.S., and they're very, very expensive. Email, did you have a Facebook post or anything you want to share with us tonight?
You know, George, I did. It's a Facebook post from one of the show's long-time friends, Jerry Boyd, WR5G. This was back in actually late October, and he was talking about switching over to a different company for internet access in his location in Texas, I think. He was asking people how deep providers bury in the fiber property, you know, up to the lead coming from the source to the house. And I know he was kind of worried because he saw they only really buried about 2 inches deep. And, George, I saw you actually replied to that, saying that they did some flex conduit or flex tubing that goes about 6 inches deep. And I think I'm in the same boat as you there, from the pole buried under coming up to a box that's on the house on the side. And, you know, I guess now that I'm in the country, there's a lot of people with backhoes around here.
Yeah.
And attachments that could definitely do some damage. So he was really worried about that. And there was a lot of feedback. There's probably a lot of different contractors doing different things. I guess you just got to know where not to dig.
Yeah.
And hopefully it goes a little bit deeper, but, you know, it varies greatly. But I noticed he said he's got 2 gigs up, 2 gigs down. That's pretty impressive.
We can get that tier.
It's like, what, an extra $15 a month?
Is that all? I hadn't really priced it.
But, I mean, you can't use 1 gig.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing most of the time will fill it up. Now, I was guessing they buried mine 6 inches. I didn't actually go out and dig it up and try to measure it.
Mine's about...
You think it's a foot?
I know mine is, because I went out there and looked at it.
Mine could be that deep. I don't know.
They use a little trencher.
But as far as the flex conduit, Emil, no, that's only right here at the shack. It comes from the box on the wall. It goes down into the ground about 6 inches. And flex conduit, and from there it's just fiber. The flex doesn't run all the way out to the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so armored cable or something they got underground, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. If not, they'll be replacing it.
Yep.
Tommy?
What?
You've been getting excited about an event that you're going to create yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been threatening to do the Parks on the Air thing.
Yeah.
So if that works out, well, let's watch it, then I'll have some comments at the end.
Well, I think I'm going to finally break down and do it. I'm going to try my hand at Parks on the Air. So I've gotten set up on the website. Go to parksontheair.com. If you don't already have an account there, create one. First, let's go to Maps of Entities, Parks on the Air map, use our current location. And you can see all the parks that are around you. Or you can go to other areas and look. This one is actually really close to my house. You've seen this park on the show before. George and I have gone out there. I went out there with the Jackson Amateur Radio Club field day before. It's a pretty nice little park around here. I'll probably do that one. Once I get my technique down and make sure my gear is okay and everything's working well, then I might venture out for a little bit farther, but I'll try a close one first. So let's go ahead and sign in. When you log in, it's going to take us to this Active Spots page. It's going to show you all the ones that are active right now. It refreshes every minute or two also. So this one's going to show you that W7PCT is activated in a park in Columbia River Gorge National Forest, actually. And there's the identifier for it, US0731 in Oregon. He's on 18084. Last heard 5 seconds ago, 8 seconds ago, Yeah, this one's in Washington, Oregon, Kentucky. To work it, you either need to be an activator or a hunter. So I'm going to try my hand at being an activator, although I was a hunter one time. I don't even remember it. So if I go over here to my call sign, click down to hunter log, you can see that I made a contact with this guy, KD4DQP, on single sideband in South Carolina at that park on April 13th of 2021, so 3 years ago. And 3.5 years ago, almost. You either can be a hunter or an activator. So how do you activate? So we can go in here and do an add activation if you want to set it up ahead of time. And you don't have to do that, but you certainly can. Or you can go in and you can spot yourself, which is probably what I'll do. And I'll go in, activate myself, my call sign, and I'm spotted by myself. And I'll put my frequency maybe, 7250, whatever. And my park will be there, and I'm going to be on single sideband. There's some hints down here, too, if you're not sure what to do. So you can mention your mode in the comments. You can put switching to FT8 or whatever if you want to notify people that you're going to change modes and so forth. So I'll do that and spot. And then when I do that, it's going to show up on this page that we were on with my call sign that I spotted myself, frequency that I'm on, and the mode that I'm working on, and that lets people know that I'm out there ready to make some QSOs. All the responsibility is on the activator. So if you, at least this is the way I understand it, so be sure you take some logging software or pencil and paper, which is probably what I'm going to do, and be sure to log everything. So you want to do, you want to log the call sign, the time, the frequency, everything, just kind of like you were doing field day. Most time you give, I hear them giving signal reports. You can also do a park to park. If typically park to parks are kind of given a little preference. So if you hear a bunch of people on a pile up for you, and you hear a park to park, you, most of the time people kind of stop and take those. You don't have to, but it's kind of courtesy to do that. At least that's from my understanding. The hunters, you give the parks, the guys at the park, the contacts, and the guy at the park does all the work. So how do we log it? You can use any of the logging software that supports parks on the air. I think the one that George and I use for field day, I'm pretty sure it does. And there's some others. You guys probably know more about it than I do, but I'm going to use paper and pencil. So you can go through here and upload your logs. Just anyone that will export it in that ADIF format will work. Upload them here, and then your contacts with you will show up on their hunter log like you saw mine earlier. I'm probably missing big parts of this because I haven't actually done it yet, so bear with me. We're going to go out in the next few weeks and try it, and I'm probably going to either, I know I'll learn as I'm going, so we got to get started somewhere, right? Okay, well let's go take my gear out, and I want to go over it. I've got an antenna from MFJ that I wanted to try out. I haven't actually set it up yet, so that's what I'm thinking about using, because I want my kit to be kind of compact. When I travel and go places with my family, I'd like to be able to take it and not take a lot of extra room in the car. Today I'm going to go through my kit, test it all out here in my backyard park, and make sure everything is working and the antenna is working like I want it to, or like I think it should anyway. It's the MFJ 1898, I believe was the part number of it. I got it from MFJ right before they announced that Martin was going to retire. They were going to close the doors, but there's still some of these left if you're interested in one of them. I looked on their website and saw it. I cut a couple of counterpoise wires, one for 20 meters, one for 40 meters. So I'm going to hook that up. And as far as my antenna, I've got a bracket I'm going to mount to this ground rod, short ground rod that I'm going to drive into the ground here. And see, I've also got a tripod, but I'm trying to keep it, the bulk, small, the one I take with me. Unfortunately, I'll have to carry a hammer and a pair of vice grips probably to pull it out of the ground, but that's okay. So let's take a look at my kit and see what I got here I'm going to set up.
Going to be using my ICOM IC705. You've seen many times on the show. My favorite radio. And I've got some coax here, a little short piece of coax I'm going to run to my antenna. I've got my bag of wires and connectors. I've got my UR kits, SWR analyzer to test the antenna. Got a little rubber duck I keep in here in case I want to get on the D-Star or something. And I've got my AH705 tuner I'm going to be using. My Miati battery, my 8-amp hour one you've seen on here numerous times. I've got my Bluetooth headset, which I won't fool with that today, but I will use it later when we actually really go to the park. Hopefully that'll be next month. I've got the antenna mounted on here. I've got the rod drove into the ground about a foot, foot and a half, enough for it's kind of sturdy. I don't want to have a hard time pulling it out. So, not here. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and extend the whip. I think it's about 103 inches long, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe. Have to measure it sometime and see. But the way it works is there's a nut down here you loosen, and then you can raise up the antenna to change the tap on here. You can hear there's a coil in there, and there's a little tap that's rubbing across it, clicking. Now, there wasn't a manual in the pack with mine. I don't know if there's one that comes with the other ones, but I'm going to have to figure out where to put it. So that's one reason why we're setting it up today instead of doing this out at the park. So I'm going to go ahead and just put it somewhere around 6, maybe. I don't know. Tighten that up a little so it don't slide. And let me get the coax hooked up in the tuner. And again, I'll be right back. I'm not sure how this is going to show on here, but hopefully you can see that the SWR is way off. I've got it set for 7.4, 7.2 in the 40-meter band. It's way off, so I'm going to try changing this coil. It should probably be longer. So let's pull it up. Oh, look at that. You can see it in real time that it changes. So what I'm going to do is get it close, and then I'm going to mark that down. And actually, it's going to be on the video, and I'm going to mark it down later. Yeah. One click down from 13 is about as good as I'm going to get it. That's a SWR 1.3. That's no tuner or anything. So now let's change to 14 megahertz, like I said. I'll do 14.2 again. So, and let's bring it down. Again, hopefully you can see that. If not, I'll just try to have to get some pictures of it, put it in the video. This antenna is supposed to work with, I believe it's 40 through 6 meters. Yeah, 7 through 30 and 50 megahertz. Got about a 1.6. That's for 20 meters. Let's go over here and turn on the rig and let's see what we can hear. We'll run it through the tuner. Well, I had to get out my universal socket set to tighten up the bracket over there. So anyway, got a little extra piece of gear I need to remember to take with me. Let's turn on the rig. So this is our setup so far. This is pretty much everything I'm going to need to take with me. I've got the 705. I've got my cell phone with the Parks on the Air website on. I'll show you that in a bit. I've got my tuner hook set up. My little rubber duck there stays in my bag. I probably won't use it. My antenna analyzer you just saw. And my battery. And it's all hooked up over here. I've got my speaker mic. Okay, so let's go over to 20 meters. 14 megahertz. Helps if we turn the audio up. Let's, for fun, let's see if we can find somebody on Parks on the Air. Okay, it's the Parks on the Air website. ParksOnTheAir.com. The link will be in the show notes, so it's on the bottom of the screen. So let's log in. And I'm already logged in with my account, so let's see what we can find on 20 meters. Here's one. Oh, he's on CW. FT4. So this one's 14257. So let's see what we can find over on 14257. See what else is on here. Here's one, 14296, North Carolina. There he is. 4858. Let's see if we can try to get this guy.
Whiskey Zero, Mike, Mike. Number 4, Alpha Tango Juliet. Anki, Local Bay 4, Golf Papa Tango, Bark on the air.
November 5, Zulu, November Oscar. Well, I give up for tonight. It's getting dark out here. The camera's not going to be working too well here in a few minutes. Let's pack all this stuff up and we'll try it out at the park next week or two.
Looks like you're set up for some POTA action.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I did try more than just the one time you saw me do it there. I cut a lot of that out for the video because it was getting too long. But yeah. If the park's on the air thing works out, I'm going to try to go down and see Emil down there and see do the SWOTA. I've tried backyards on the air, biota, and then who knows? I might do something different. Maybe McDota, McDonald's on the air. I don't know, something. Yeah. Who knows? Sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Hey, when you get going, I might have to do some SWOTA in a couple of months.
Yeah. Tommy, I got a suggestion for you. You something you said in that segment caught my eye, and knowing how I use the ground rods for my portable station with HF, get you a pair of good gloves to rip that out of the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can, especially with the ones with the grips on the inside here, can kind of see that. Because you're grabbing that, post up, it does get pretty.
Yeah, I got a pair of big, I actually bought a pair from Horror Fraught. What is it?
Hazard Fraught.
Hazard Fraught.
Horror Freight?
Big, yeah. Horror Freight. Vice grips, and I used that to pull it up. But the gloves are a good idea, too. They'd be easier to carry around.
Yep, along with your universal socket set.
Yeah.
Well, if you weren't using the universal socket set and you were using regular open-end wrenches with the closed end, you could take one of those closed-end wrenches, slip it over the end of the probably use about a half inch, and then slip it over the end of the ground rod and just bring it up on an angle, and then it'll grip that ground rod, and you can pull it right out of the ground.
Yeah.
See, that's the way they do it with the metric system.
or you could use a 13-millimeter open-end wrench with a closed end on the end.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I've been threatening to do it for a long time, and I'm kind of looking forward to it, especially this time of the year.
Yeah.
I almost did it in the summertime, but it's just too hot to go sit out there around this parts of the country.
That sounds funny. You should come up here in December and try it.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty nice in December around here.
Well, Mike, you had a news item? Or
I did. It's actually this item. One. Well, they're all pretty interesting, but this one really caught my eye because I've been on a lot of virtual meetings lately, and I didn't realize the first virtual meeting occurred in 1916. It linked up 5,100 engineers from Atlanta to San Francisco. It goes on to say how they did it, posted the link there so you can read the article. It's not that long, but it's pretty interesting the way they coordinated all the telephone systems to work together. And there's also comment on the fact that during the meeting, some of the stations along the way, even though they were kept muted, they sent telegrams to the headquarters with their attendance and greetings. So I guess you could think of that as back in 1916, that would have been the chat room. Pretty interesting. You should check it out.
Now, you know, when I first glanced at this, I did not realize that Alexander Graham Bell had a man bun.
Yeah, you know, that kind of struck me funny because I'm not really – I'm going to have to check that out. I'm not sure that's the right picture.
I bought one of these several months ago. They've been out, I don't know how long now, maybe a year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how long these have been out, but mine's been in the box. And I decided I need to pull it out, play with it a little bit, do a project with it. And this is what I came up with. You know, there's more to life than amateur radio. There's also microcontrollers, amongst other things. But if you've watched this show any length of time, you know that we like to play with these, create projects, do different things that that we need done, and sometimes just useless stuff. Shazam. That's what I'm going to do today. We're going to take a look, though, at a new microcontroller. I say new because it's not a replacement. The Arduino Uno is probably one of the most popular microcontroller boards ever made. Simplicity, inputs, digital inputs, analog inputs, digital outputs, a variety of functions, serial you can do with it, USB, all kinds of things. Few things that you could not do, but the majority of your simple projects, and even a little more complex projects, the Arduino Uno Rev 3 was suited for it. Here is the new Arduino Uno Rev 4 Wi-Fi. There's two different versions of this. There's an R4 Minima, which does not have Wi-Fi or Bluetooth built in, and does not have the LED matrix built in either. But it's cheaper. There are a number of things that are different between the two. Basically, the R4 will run most all of the software that would have been written for the Revision 3. There are a few things that it won't run, though, and those are things mostly tied to the chip that was used in the original Arduino Unos. There's a new Renesas chip that's being used here in the Revision 4 models, and if you've got the Wi-Fi version, there's also an ESP32 chip. Now, the ESP32 is a microcontroller in its own right, along with the Wi-Fi radio and Bluetooth radio. However, that's all they're using it for on this board. They're using this Renesas chip over here for everything else. So what's the differences? Well, the Revision 3 was an 8-bit microcontroller. It used the ATmega 328P microcontroller. Now, there's still one very good thing, in my opinion, about this particular model, and that is this microcontroller is in a DIP chip package. So you can build your own PC boards and put a DIP socket on it or solder this directly to the PC board. It's not surface mount, so it's fairly easy to do. Doesn't take as much effort as surface mount components do. The R4 Minima and the Wi-Fi both use a 32-bit microcontroller unit. It's the RA4 M1 series from Renesas. There's a USB Type-B connector here on the Revision 3 and earlier Arduino Unos. However, on the R4 version, either the Minima or the Wi-Fi, there's a USB Type-C connector. The Revision 3 had 32 kilobytes of flash RAM memory, while the Minima and the Wi-Fi have 256 kilobytes of flash memory, so quite a big increase in memory size there. The R3 had 2 kilobytes of SRAM. The R4 has 32 kilobytes of SRAM. Big increase there. The Revision 4 runs at 48 megahertz. That's three times faster than the Arduino Uno Revision 3. Both of these devices have analog-to-digital converters. On the original Revision 3, it was only 10-bit resolution. On the Revision 4, it defaults to 10 bits for compatibility with the earlier versions, but you could also set it to do 12-bit or 14-bit resolution, which gives you a lot more detail in the analog signals that you're trying to measure. Revision 3 would operate from 7 to 12 volts. Revision 4, 6 to 24 volts, so a little bit broader there. Revision 3 had no real-time clock built in. The Revision 4 does have a real-time clock that's day, date, as well as time. Revision 4 also supports CAN bus. You know, that's the bus that's used in automobiles for troubleshooting and controlling things. The R3 didn't have such capabilities. Also, the R4 Wi-Fi has this built-in LED matrix and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. Now, the R4 Minima does not have those two, but everything else is the same on it. So that's just a few of the basic differences. There's more to it than that, like you can generate square waves from the digital outputs using pulse-width modulated signals on the R3. On the R4, you can actually generate square waves, sine waves, and sawtooth waves. I put together a little project just to show a few of the differences and capabilities of the new Revision 4. This is nowhere near all of it. There would not be enough time in an entire show to cover it. Maybe we'll look at some of the other possibilities in the future. Here's the connections I made to the Arduino Uno R4 Wi-Fi module. Starting at the bottom, you'll see we've got 5 volts input. Right next to that, we've got ground. Then we've got the analog inputs. Those are the ones we're going to be using here on the bottom. You can connect your power supply straight into the 5-volt input of the Arduino Uno, or you can use a USB-C cable to power the device. If you look down below 5 volts there, you'll see a 5K-ohm pot. The wiper on that pot goes over to A5. What we're doing is sampling the voltage off of that pot into the analog 5 input. We're going to use that for speed control for a routine that we've got in the program. A0 is going to be an analog output. Now, we didn't have that on the Revision 3 Arduino, so we're going to get a sine wave out of that A0 port, and I've got a 10K ohm pot that's going to be used to adjust volume with. And here's another thing that we didn't have on the Arduino Uno Revision 4. There is an op-amp circuit built into the microcontroller here. It uses pins A1 as an op-amp positive input, A2 as the negative input, and A3 as the op-amp output. The sine wave is going to be kind of low coming out of this analog output. We'll use the op-amp circuit, turn it on, so that we've got a little amplifier to drive our speaker out there. 10K ohm pot then is going to feed A1, which is our positive input to the op-amp, and we can just adjust our volume there. You need those two 10K ohm resistors below A3. That's to make the op-amp circuit function. And you can see I put a 47 microfarad capacitor out before the speaker to DC isolate the speaker, and also a little 470 ohm resistor to isolate the speaker a little bit from the op-amp output. Up above, you can see digital inputs 1, 2, and 3. I have 3 push buttons. Rather than use pull-up resistors, I just use the pull-up command inside the Arduino Uno language. 3 different buttons. The first one is going to play a 1 kilohertz tone. The second one is going to play random tones. And the third one is for a special test mode I set up. There's really not enough time to dig into the code here. I'm just going to do a brief rundown of it. At the top, we've just got some comments up here and some information to some web links that you can find more details on how to use some of these commands. We're going to include a few header files here. We've got the portion of the program that initializes it, then the setup function that always runs anytime you start an Arduino Uno, and then we've got a loop function that is the main part of the program that it's sitting there constantly running through. Below that, I've got a couple of other functions here. There's a void 1K tone. This is a function that plays 1,000 hertz. Very simple, just one line of code. And then there's a function here called randTones that plays random tones. It just generates a random number, plays that frequency, and it also displays some frames that we edited using the Arduino Matrix LED editor. And that's all the code there is. If you take out the blank lines, it's less than 100 lines of code. So what does this do? Let's take a look. We've got our dual trace oscilloscope set up here. The number one channel is connected to the output of the oscillator, which is on A0. Channel 2 is connected to the output of the op amp. So let's see what we got. First thing, if we hit the reset button to start up the Arduino here, we got text, amateurlogic.tv, scrolls across one time. Only a few lines of code are necessary to do that. Now I've got three little buttons connected down here. The first button, if I touch it, that's going to give us a 1 kilohertz tone. Now, of course, we're looking at the output of A0. Now, we can see this is a little odd looking. It is a sine wave, but you can see these little steps here. That's where they approximated it and switched it on and off to create a sine wave. So, not a perfect sine, but nevertheless, it is a sine. We can see on the output of the op amp here, that's not exactly what you would call a sine wave there either. It did smooth out those bumps on there, but you'll notice it's a little flat here on the bottom. As we start increasing the gain, you'll notice it starts flat topping there. That's where we're getting into distortion. So no matter where we run the gain, it's never a perfect sine, but it does give us a lot more volume than we would get just straight out of analog zero. That's pretty low signal there. The second button runs our sequence of random tones. We've got the LED display just flashing random LEDs. There is a pattern to it. If you watch close enough, you'd eventually figure it out. But I used a little animation to put that together, just so simulate computer thinking. And you can see the frequencies of the tones are varying here. This is something I thought that Dean Martin could use on Ham College. Sometimes he just takes a wild guess on one of the answers. This will help do that. We'll use our great computer here to randomly generate an answer, since all the questions are multiple choice, A through D. You can press the third button. B. The answer is B. Whether or not that's correct, I don't know. It's just a random chance. A. And it's a 1 in 4 chance it could be any of these. So we got a D. If you keep pressing it, you'll eventually get a... Well, there's another D. You'll eventually get a C, a B, an A, or a D. Just whatever. D seems to be a particularly heavy odds tonight. There we go. We finally got a C. I just wanted to be able to demonstrate a couple of things on the Rev4. The Arduino Uno Wi-Fi here. This is the first version of the Uno that's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built into it. We're not even going to look at those tonight. All we did is look at the analog input, and we changed the AD converter. On the Rev4, you only got a 10-bit A to D. On here, you can go 12 or 14 bits. So I stepped it up to 14 bits. So we've got a wider variety of voltages that we're sampling. It's 0 to 5 volts, but there's a lot more steps to it. Also, I wanted to demonstrate the LED, and we're just doing text here with the A, B, C, or D. Or scrolling amateurlogic.tv when we first started up. And I'm using frames with the Matrix LED frame editor just to flash some random frames on there to make it look like the thing's thinking. And I guess you could call it AI or ABCD. Maybe RI is a better name, random intelligence.
That's pretty good. Be sure to power that thing up next in a couple of weeks.
I am. We're going to see how it does on a test.
Okay.
This holiday season, elevate the amateur radio experience with ICOM. ICOM's top-tier transceivers and innovative features make the perfect gift for any ham radio enthusiast. Built tough for outdoor use and emergencies, ICOM's handheld radios offer reliable performance, longer battery life, and clear signal quality. Beginners will love the ID50A for hours of fun and enjoyment. Easy D-Star settings, band scope with waterfall display, voice messaging, and share picture function. The ID52A is the first handheld amateur radio with a full-color 2.3-inch waterfall display. The IC705 and IC7300 are the go-to rigs for outdoor hams who love POTA and SOTA activations. Both radios feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall display for intuitive functions and setting operations. The IC705 provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand. The IC7300 is the industry's first to use RF direct sampling system in an entry-level HF radio. ICOM's amateur base stations provide hams with powerful performance, clear signals, and long-distance communication. With versatile frequency coverage, superior receiver sensitivity, and easy-to-use interfaces, they suit both beginners and experienced operators. With the IC7610, faint signals are no longer challenging for DXers or contesters. The new IC7760 offers a modern connected system with a separate remote control head and RF deck linked via a standard LAN cable. With the ICPW2, take your contesting experience to the next level with ICOM's industry-first linear amplifier, which includes digital pre-distortion and a built-in 2x6 automatic antenna selector for single-operator 2 radio operation. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios, visit icomamerica.com/amateur. Happy holidays, and may your signals be strong all year long.
If anybody happens to be in the Kingston, Ontario area, you have to check it out. I actually stumbled upon it by accident. I was not intending to go there, but when I walked in there, it's like, whoa, have a look. The interior is all, it's a little disjointed with the various displays because it's really jam-packed. And I tried to do it in order of eras, World War One, starting out World War One, going to two, and then carrying on from there. But it's interesting stuff, like this transmitter, circa 1916, Morse code, spark gap. Telephone, I don't know. It says telephone exchange, but are they exchanging for sandbags? I don't know. And yeah, I'm not sure about that that spark gap transmitter. Those tubular or cylindrical objects there. I read on that, I blew up the image, and it said Edison Swan, Edison-Swan. So I'm not sure if those are coils or what exactly they are. But anyway, they're interesting. You'll see that in another spark gap transmitter.
Swan.
And there's a spark gap wireless receiver. Every receiver is a spark gap receiver, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, if it detects AM, it'll detect spark gaps. And that's the apparently an early 20th century Canadian Forces communication classroom where they did teaching.
That's pretty cool.
And there's our plaque. Apparently this was on the outside of the Department of Natural Defense's Royal Canadian Corps. And there's a fellow there sporting a Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah, I was going to say, coonskin hat. Buy your clothes at the same place.
But he doesn't have any beers.
Okay.
No, they're under the desk, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Out in the snow.
Keep them out of sight. And this is a, I think, a 1930s vintage mobile radio. And I'm not sure where or how it was used, but it was designed for mobile operation.
Look at that hat, man. It's a nice hat.
And here we're getting into World War II. I think this was made by Northern Telecom. And whenever I think of Northern Telecom, I immediately think of telephone equipment. But I guess during the war, they made military radio equipment as well.
So what was the rock for, adjusting frequency?
I'm not really sure what that rock is for. It's got some scrapes on it, so maybe it was used to adjust the radio. I don't know. Oh, this is interesting. This is a Model 10, and it's the first microwave relay telephone system. It's a multi-channel, and it was used during the D-Day invasion, and I guess it was really valued for the communications it was able to send back and forth.
Now, I guess there'd be multiple advantages to that in that era. First, multi-channel, and then being microwave,
exactly.
You'd kind of confine.
Because I guess the problem was, up until this time, radios were all lower HF, and they relied on, for any distance, they relied on skip, obviously, for any communications distance. And whereas this was microwave, as long as you had line of sight, you could get communications. They used to have the equipment set up in these trucks or these vans, and they would park them on strategically placed high points. This is Canada's spy school, Camp X. There's a series out there that I watched, and it was Canada's spy school. They trained agents. It had a radio comm center during the Second World War. They used to keep in communication with Britain and the rest of the Allies, the most powerful shortwave radio communications system at the time. And interestingly, it was created by a few Canadian amateurs. And if you go to Wikipedia and you search for Hydra World War II radio, it speaks about getting bits and pieces from various places, and one of them was they got a 10-kilowatt transmitter, I think from either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, I can't remember, somewhere in Pennsylvania anyway, and that transmitter apparently, when it was all hooked up as a system, it was way ahead of its time. Yeah, I was surprised to see that, but they hid radios in their bunks. Obviously, they didn't want to be caught with one of those, but they found ingenious ways of hiding them. This is, radar is particularly for the merchant marines, is a big deal. That was a real lifesaver for them. This slide here, I couldn't get the clarity too well. Obviously, the one on the top left is an oscilloscope, but there's some other various pieces of test gear that was used when servicing, you know, the Army radios and such.
Looks like Tommy's meter there.
No, that's not Earth, Moon, Earth.
Yeah, this is interesting. And I can remember at the time when these were the big deal, the M7000s from Universal Radio, being able to decode some of those mystery signals that you heard on shortwave. And obviously the military got onto those as well.
What is it, M7000?
Yeah, from Universal Radio in Ohio.
I've been there before.
And there's another one there. This time there's a video monitor there. I guess they had it hooked up. I'd like to have one of those Raycal receivers too. Yeah, if you read the little card there, it says Contra Choice and Handheld Radio, Handycom. So we've left the World War II area. I saw this. I wasn't sure what quite to make of it.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's the military communications for Central Africa at the time. I don't know if that's true or not.
Probably not at that time, but probably at a time it was.
Yeah, early teletype and cipher machines. We'll see the Enigma machine later on, but these are the earlier ones. Obviously, they weren't around too long because they probably the code was broken pretty easily, so they didn't stick around too long. There's the Enigma machine. This one, you can tell it's only got the four rotors, so I'm assuming that would be one of the earlier Enigma machines. I still think of the model kit that the working Enigma kit that Chip built. This is encryption for phone and radio. They had a display of these vacuum tubes, more radios, and the RDF on the right there at the top right.
Yeah,
is pretty interesting. And more radios.
Can't have too many.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
And keys. Yeah, I noticed, Tommy, you shouldn't keep those handy talkies on your shelf there because they multiply like rabbits. Yeah, these are teletype machines. I had one of those Model 17 teletypes when I first got licensed. I used to use it for RTTY. Boy, that thing was noisy when you fired it up.
Yeah, we used to have one of those. I don't know which one it was. It's one of those models or not, but we had them at radio stations back in the day. That's how you got the news.
That's right.
And analog phone line would get noisy, and it would go to hallucinating. We called it garble, but you'd call it hallucinating now. Because you'd be reading down a news story and going all along and everything's fine. You better look at that news ahead of time because all of a sudden it's all these words you can't pronounce.
Oh, yeah, I got a new production company.
That's a trick there.
That's
all. You notice the grooves in that dish? We had to get them in that dish because you put food in a regular bowl and you turn your head and turn back and look at him, the food would be gone. It's like he just inhaled it. So that bowl design is supposed to make him slow down, but he's figured out a way, just kind of drives around in circles and scoops it all in his mouth anyway. So he figured that out in a couple of days. He can empty the bowl in almost the same amount of time by going in circles.
Wow. That was good stuff, Mike. I've seen something similar. I'm trying to think of what ham fest it was. Some ham fest I was at that had a display similar to that, but it was not that same stuff, but it was World War II era.
Yeah? At a ham fest?
Yeah, it may have been out west somewhere. Somewhere I saw a... It may have been Huntsville one year. I can't remember where
cool
it was.
Cool stuff. My son and I are thinking about going back to England for one last trip. We're planning on going by the park over there to see the Enigma machine and all that.
Are you going to activate it?
Bletchley Park.
Yeah, Bletchley
Park. Bletchley Park.
Yep.
Wow.
I'd like to get over there. I didn't get over into that area, but it would be really interesting to see that touring machine, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
If I do, I'll have to take plenty of pictures when I'm there.
This is from our friend Kevin, ZL1KFM, down in New Zealand. It says, morning all. Look at that antenna analyzer, something that's been missing in my gear for a long time. At home, I always use an SWR meter from the radio. Tried a VNA, worked, but a little cumbersome. So seeing that HRO and a few other companies have specials for the rig expert units, I was thinking about getting one. What are your thoughts on what to get? You don't need units that cover 1 gigahertz, but looking at the two listed below, AA650 Zoom, and Rig Expert Stick X Pro, which I'm not familiar with those, but I was going to ask for suggestions of what people thought a good one was nowadays, because I don't know them very well. But I did find out that he bought the AA650 Zoom, but still kind of curious.
I was going to say the Rig Expert, that's top shelf stuff.
Yeah, it looks just nice. I used George's one day over here to test my antenna. Yeah,
mine's an AA230 Zoom, so it's several models down from what Kevin got there.
I'll have to look it up.
That'll go a higher frequency. That'll cover UHF.
Yeah.
Mine won't.
The only thing about the interface seemed a little bit weird till you figure out how to use it, but then it's no problem.
Yeah,
it's a little bit strange to me.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
The only thing, and I don't know about these other models of Rig Experts there, the only thing I don't like about mine is you hit the button, it sweeps one time, and you get the trace. Uh-huh. It's not continuously sweeping.
Oh, that's why you were asking me about my UKIP.
Yes.
One.
So every time you make a change, you have to hit the button to sweep
trigger
again.
Yeah.
I like the little UKIPs when I showed on my segment. You've seen it before. You had it from MFJ.
I don't even know if they
still make them or not.
I don't know.
But anyway, it's really nice. It's so simple. It's really easy to use. Yeah. That little battery in it lasts eternity, too. It's got two in it.
Well, Tommy, I know you're planning on going in the morning, head down to Slidell.
I am.
What are you going to be doing Tuesday night?
Ah, it's a trick question. I'm glad you did it though, because it's sneaking up on me. We're gonna be doing the net, the logic net. It's you and I think, aren't we? You and I are going to be calling it this time. So it's actually the 26th, right before Thanksgiving. So it's not this coming week. It's
on two Tuesdays. Okay. Does that work better for you?
Yeah, it does, because that's more like what I was expecting. Check in with us. We'll be glad to hear from you. The list of connections has changed, so take note of the slide here, and there'll be a reminder sent out with this information on it right before the net, too. So
yeah, all the places you get info on Amateur Logic, Facebook, X, I guess it gets on X.
Mm-hmm.
Groups.io, this will be posted.
All the usual places. So be sure to check it good and or check it before. Set a reminder, because it's always the fourth Tuesday of the month now. We were trying to do it after the show, but it changed around, and it was kind of hard for people to keep up with. So it's always the fourth Tuesday of the month now. So you can kind of set your reminders on your phone or your calendar, whatever you're going to do.
Tom, since my shirt crashed over here, I'm going to be looking for a wardrobe. You got any suggestions, Emil?
Yeah, because that would give me heartburn when I see it.
Yeah, I would say you could visit the shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic site and get you some snazzy apparel and mugs and other things. What do you think, George?
Well, that might work out.
They're guaranteed not to crash.
We haven't had one crash yet.
Not yet.
I've got one that looks a little ragged that's been worn for I don't know how many years.
It's still chugging along.
Yeah. Well, are the mugs in there as well? That mug you've got there didn't come from there, Mel.
Yeah, there's okay. Mugs
that's
in there.
That's a special one?
Yes.
That's a special one, Mike.
That's a graduation mug.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's mugs, cups, backpacks, everything. A lot of stuff in there.
See, you might not know that. There's a lot of things that you might not know that If you need to keep up with stuff, where could you do that, Mike?
Facebook.com/groups/amateurlogic.tv.
Yeah, you can follow us at Amateur Logic on Twitter, too, or X, or whatever you want to call it this week.
Yeah, or you could visit groups.io/g/amateurlogic. Well, you don't really visit that. You sign up there, and then groups.io will send out an email whenever we or any group member releases a post, but it's generally only going to be announcing when there's going to be a show coming up or when the recorded episode has posted.
Or the net.
Or the net and stuff like that. That's basically announcements.
You won't get spammed from
them. You won't get spammed.
Oh, I like their weekly digest. You can subscribe to a weekly digest. If you have a, let's say you're following a group that's pretty active, you don't have time to read them all.
Right.
You can just get the digest, and it sends you one email, gives you kind of like the Reader's Digest condensed version.
And, you know, sometimes the editors of the segments here on Amateur Logic fail to put a link to what they were talking about in there. Like, I think that happened at least twice tonight. What could you do if you watch the video and the link is not there?
Well, you can go to the wiki, amateurlogic.tv/wiki. The Wikimeister kind of puts that stuff all together.
Yeah.
As long as they were included in the show notes.
Yeah.
The doc. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not right here, but when I printed this out, but it is now.
You can download
the schematic and the code for the circuit that I did tonight and the project there. If you want to play with it yourself.
Yeah, the parks on there, stuff will be there. Most of the stuff from the show's in there that you need.
We'd appreciate it if you enjoyed the show tonight, click that little like button wherever it is down there. Click the share button as well. Get a link that you can share with your friends. Even your enemies. You might want to have some of your enemies watch Amateur Logic.
Just spread the
word. I don't know.
That's right. Love your enemies, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's what there they say. Go. Well, before we get out of here, any final thoughts tonight, Tommy?
No. Looking forward to going and visiting Emil and Glenn at the Ham Fest, and I'll have some video of that coming up. I'm going to be going to do in the parks on there, too, but I'll probably show the Hamfest video next if I get some good stuff. But anyway, see you guys tomorrow.
Email?
Does anybody live stream?
Will there be good stuff?
There'll be good stuff, no doubt. I'll have I'm giving a forum on some digital modes, give some updates from I usually do that at the Hamfest, and plus helping them out there with some of their other stuff, but always a good member of that club, W5SLA. We got our field day scores, too, and we did above what we normally do. I think they published them already in the latest QST, so it's pretty good stuff. I'm sure y'all maybe saw y'all's, too, huh? What's the club? AXC, is it?
Yeah.
W5AXC.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
well, on email, be sure to open your wallet up before you go inside the flea market. You don't want all those moths coming out in the middle of that flea market scaring folks away.
Have you put another dollar in there since Dayton 2 years ago?
Yes, I put another dollar on. And there is a good vendor coming down who I've never seen or done out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chat Radio is going to be down there that way. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to see what he brings down.
Yeah, they do a good display.
Yeah.
Mike, any final thoughts from the Great White North?
Let's see. Not really. Things at work are still crazy busy, but around the house here, things are starting to calm down a little bit. With the colder weather, you're not able to do so much outside. The greenhouse is finished, and I got to learn what 15 tons of stone was in terms of quantity, because I had 15 tons of stone delivered to spread out. Actually, they were limestone screenings to spread out around the greenhouse, which thankfully is now finished. It's got a door on it, and it's all enclosed. So the only thing left to do is to do a little bit of arranging of things, and then there's a pergola that I have to put on the front next year. But that's going to be in the spring or summer. A
couple of Tuesdays from now, November 26th, join Tommy and I on the LogicNet.
We're going to skip Christmas, the December. Christmas one, the December one, because it falls too close to Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to skip that one, but we'll be back on January.
Thanks for being here tonight, everyone. We enjoyed it as always. Look forward to seeing you around the middle of December for the next Amateur Logic. Until then, live long and prosper.
Keep your intelligence random.
That's a good one.
Live long and prosper. I can't do it. I got.
I don't have any trouble. Well, maybe a little. Yep.
Nanu nanu.
Yeah, I can do that.
That'll work too.
Or what was that dude? Where's my car? Zoltan or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Remember that? Yeah.
7-3.
7-3.
7-3, everybody. Good night. 7-3.